Greetings and salutations, everyone. I am AC2GS. My name is Roy. I'm the control operator for the Limark Technical Net. It's been going strong for more than 44 years. And every Sunday night at around 8 o'clock, we get together in front of the radio, and we tell each other interesting information. We learn from each other. We teach each other. And hopefully we entertain each other. And I thank everyone for joining me again this Sunday night at 8 p.m. when we try and do this all over again. Let me drop for a second, and I will give you the usual links. If you want to reach me via email, that would be either for what we used to call mailbag questions. Those were questions people would ask normally during the technical net, but if they weren't available to contact the repeater, they would email it to me, and if it sounded interesting, it would be read and hopefully answered, and the person could listen either over the internet audio stream of the technical net or go into the archive files of past tech nets and discover the answers. Also, if you have a TechNet puzzle to share with me, those are as rare as hen's teeth. Thankfully, I've discovered another one tonight. It's not amateur radio related, it's science related, but I think you'll find it interesting, informative, and hopefully even entertaining. So that's the TechNet puzzles. Also, if something happens in the news, something technology related that you have expertise in that you'd like to share with us. Sometimes people will contact me via email, say, I know a lot about this subject. I'd like to talk about it on the next technical net. We arrange that. Or if you want me to tap Paul on the shoulder and ask him to take a look at some space or NASA related story and remark upon it, you can contact him directly. His email address is spacenetreport@gmail.com. But you can email me at mailbag@ac2gs.com. Also, I put together a link page of interesting articles, YouTubes, what have you, that I've seen throughout the week. They are available on my link page at any old time. It's available 24/7. We keep it up for years. So if you're interested in that and you have nothing better to do one night, just type into your browser roy.ac2gs.com, and that will bring you to my link page. We have a chat room available. It's been kind of quiet lately, but it's still available. If anyone would like to check it out, type into your browser chat.ac2gs.com, and that will bring you to the chat room. And as I mentioned earlier, we offer an internet audio stream of the technical net, and I leave it on the rest of the week so you can listen to Glen Oaks if you aren't within radio distance or with having a radio near you. Just type into your browser technet.ac2gs.com, and that'll bring you the audio stream. And as I mentioned earlier, there is an archive site of technical nets that go as far back as September 2006. It belongs to Mike, KC2NJI, and his site is called amateurradio.tv. It has over a million visits, so make it a million and one. It stores the wisdom of hams that have been on this technical net that have either moved away or unfortunately become silent keys. So their wisdom lives on MP3 files. Let me drop for a second, and I will come back and tell you what we got planned for tonight. Okay, a few things. So we have the usual, which is we will ask for questions or comments or topics for discussion. Hopefully the early ones will be amateur radio related. But we'll accept any kind of science or technology-related questions or topics. That should take us approximately to about 10:15. 10:15, Paul, WS2N, will come on with the SpaceNet report, and that should take us to 11 o'clock, and I will return to tie a bow on everything. In addition, as I mentioned before, if we have time for it, which we probably will, I have a TechNet puzzle. I find them entertaining and amusing, and I hope you do too. So I'm looking forward to doing that later. And also, we had a discussion with John N2ZC who isn't here yet. He I believe, lives in Florida, and he connects through EchoLink. He had an interesting discussion about an antenna that he pulled out of a book that called itself Collinear, that at the time looked very much like a G5RV. I posted on my link page at the very top, so if you're curious what the antenna looks like, again, just type into your browser roy.ac2gs.com, and that'll take you to my link page, and at the very top is an illustration of an antenna that, again, looks very much G5RV. And hopefully, if John logs on to EchoLink a little bit later on the net, I'll take a little time to discuss why I don't really consider it much of a collinear antenna, even though it's labeled as that. But we'll get into that later, hopefully, if John checks into EchoLink, and we'll get into the TechNet puzzle sometime during this net, if time allows. But right now it's time for topics, questions, comments, topics for discussion, if you have them, and hopefully make the first few amateur radio related if possible. If you have any of those, please hit that push to talk, give me your call sign and your first name.
Ed, K2GJE, not amateur.
WA2ZDH with a quick comment and a thank you.
Okay, John, since what you said is going to be a quick thing, let's do that.
Okay, yeah, I just wanted to say thanks for that great site, radio.garden. I've been playing around with it. I wandered all through the South Pacific, listened to Papeete Tahiti, listened to Samoa stations, felt like I was on Adventures in Paradise. Then I wandered over to Gaborone, Botswana, listened to some stations from Africa there. Felt like I was right at the number one ladies detective agency. Hi. Anyway, a very great site. Wandered pretty much around the world. Looked for the northernmost radio stations. It's a fascinating site. It's really just a GUI. It takes already existing information and presents it in a fascinating way via a globe. But it's an amazing site, a lot of fun. Just want to say thanks for it.
Okay, very good, John. Yeah, I found it fascinating. It was, you know, one of those little gems that you just kind of looking down at the ground and you find something that's shiny, you pick it up and you wipe it off, and It's a lovely little thing. It's very suitable for us radio amateurs, because we like even broadcast stations. We like radio in all shapes and sizes. So thanks, John. I'm glad you're enjoying it.
Yeah, actually, a couple of years ago, I used to listen to Radio Tahiti directly. I picked them up a few times, but I think they eliminated their shortwave outlet, so I was able, to listen to their FM stations and a few other stations in the Pacific there. A lot of fun. Thanks again.
You're very welcome, John. I'm glad that you're enjoying it. I hope the rest of the guys out there had an opportunity to play around with it. Again, for anyone who wasn't listening last week, I mentioned there's a website. It's I believe it's radio.garden, and it's a nice little, it looks very Google Map-ish. It has the globe, but rather than just zoom in to kind of look at the street signs and such, they're covered with little bright lights and ID of different broadcast stations throughout the world. And the idea is you move your cursor over a particular location and it will let you listen in to the local broadcast in that area on the globe. So it's a fascinating website. Again, radio.garden. Okay. Let me just check to see if there's anyone else who'd like to put their name down on the list for tonight. Please hit that push to talk. Give us your first name and your call sign.
Ed, K2GJE.
Yes, Ed, you're at the top of the list. I just wanted to find out if there's anyone after you. So we'll get to you in a second. I just wanted to give people a little bit more time to put their name on the list for tonight. Okay, perhaps a little later there'll be other people. So, Ed, what can I do you for tonight?
Just wanted a COVID update. I noticed people are wearing masks again, and what information you have on this new vaccine, and when do you think we should get it over?
Yeah, it's a thing again, unfortunately. If you want to be cautious, wear masks. They're not probably going to pass any laws to mandate it because of you know, the trouble they had the last time they did that. So it's going to be a voluntary thing. My guess is they haven't announced when they're going to release it to the public. My guess is it'll be very similar to the way it was last year, and it'll be offered sometime early next month in September. And I would suggest people once again take it. Obviously, it doesn't kill you or turn you into a robot or merge you with the Generation 5 cell tower mind control robot. So I would strongly urge, especially the demographics of the people that usually listen to the technical net, put you at somewhat higher risk. Fortunately, these strains are not as virulent as the original versions, so they give you some symptoms, but they're not quite as life-threatening, but still, just to be safer and sorry. Ed, does that suffice?
Yes, thank you. Evidently, the drugstores don't have it yet. At my age, I wanted to get it as soon as it's available. Thank you, and please update us again if you hear anything, over.
Yeah, I will make a point of doing that. Like I said, my surmise is that it won't be available until the beginning of September sometime. But I'll make a point of mentioning it at the top of the technical net when I hear that it's released to the public. Once again, I continue to be AC2GS. This continues to be the Limark technical net. Gosh, we got a lot more time left on our hands. So if anyone has any questions or comments or topics for discussion tonight, N2ZC is still not visible on my EchoLink indicator, so I don't want to go into that subject at this point in time. But still, anyone with any questions or comments for tonight, please hit that push to talk. Give me your first name and your call sign.
Lou, NY2H.
Yes, Lou.
Good evening, Roy. So I checked out your link page earlier today, and two of the stories interested me. One was the fasting article on intermittent fasting, which I'm kind of doing a little bit here. And the other was the wow signal. I know that Dick used to talk about the wow signal, and I guess their explanation is maybe feasible. It's hydrogen that gets energized or something like that. Maybe talk about that a little bit.
Sure. Just let me have a second to kind of pull it up out of on my website. Yeah.
Yeah, while you're doing that, people may remember or not remember. I guess this was the Arecibo telescope back in the 70s, and they got a 70-second long signal of high intensity that they didn't think was naturally created, and led to speculation of maybe intelligent life, etc. So the fellow who was analyzing the data was so struck by it, he put the word wow right over those signal strengths.
Yeah, apparently what their idea is that it's caused by a sudden brightening of a transient source of radiation like a magnetar, and they feel that a magnetar, by the way, is a neutron star with extremely strong magnetic fields, and they thought that it could excite atoms in the hydrogen cloud and produce that sudden brightening. It's a really rare kind of a phenomena, apparently, but that's their best guess at this point of where that, rather than it unfortunately being little aliens, little green aliens from far, far away, which, you know, there's one particular astronomer out of Yale that kind of likes to always run to the aliens. So they're sort of blaming it on magnetars and strong enough radiation that excites the cloud and someone looking at it in the same direction at the same time, and boop, you get that type of a signal. Which, you know, I mean, is as good as any excuse. People have been wondering at that signal for many, many, many years, and they haven't come up with anything better, so what the hell?
Yeah, yeah. I guess this was not theorized back when Dick was alive, but, yeah, there was always... He used to talk about that, and that speculation. And, of course, the other article I had mentioned was the intermittent fasting, which apparently people are engaging in, and it's mostly has some really good effects. One I think they call autophagy, where it kind of cleans up all the, waste elements from the cells and that kind of thing. Of course, it gives your insulin spikes a rest. So the body really has a chance to kind of retune. And, you know, there's different schedules. Like if you eat within a window of maybe 6 or 8 hours only in a day and fast for the remaining hours, it's not that hard, especially if you supplement with, you know, a lot of water and coffee and black coffee, it would have to be. But I'm trying to lose a few pounds now, and it seems to be starting to work. So that's something that that's pretty interesting.
Yeah, I mean, it does have a degree of a basis in evolution. Before we became the alpha creature on this planet, as we hunt and gather, and food is not readily stored for long periods of time, so it might somewhat mimic the erratic cycle of our eating when we were more primitive creatures. So it will be interesting to see, you know, if they do any kind of evolutionary kind of studies to kind of backtrack why this would be a good idea. There's a lot of research that goes on with controlled starvation. Of course, everyone and their brother heard the studies with lab rats, that if you starve a lab rat, you can extend its average life expectancy, and they don't quite know if that works for human beings as well, but they're pondering these things. They're trying to figure out how you can kind of shrink it down to something that's not pure starvation, that people can, you know, experiment and see what happens with cell growth and what have you. So the whole idea of intermittent starvation and such is a hot topic in biology these days.
Yeah. There was one other story that was out this week. I guess Dr. Fauci contracted West Nile virus. And I'll tell you, the mosquitoes here at Port Jefferson Station have been relentless, really showing their presence. But the story is that there is no vaccine for West Nile. And I'm wondering why that might be and what it would take to develop a vaccine against it, because I don't know if you can do something like the mRNA or something like that, you know, get a piece of the virus and kind of replicate it to induce immunity.
Well, it's going to take research. Research takes money, and there's only so much money to do things. We kind of got very lucky and worked very hard with coronavirus. You know, we broke all kinds of records there. I'm not quite sure what the molecular structure of West Nile virus looks like. Of course, everyone kind of has memorized the coronavirus spikes that were the kind of immunological means of developing the mRNA vaccines for COVID. So it might just unfortunately not be quite as simple. You know, when they were working on HIV, you know, they're still working on tweaking it and such. So some viral infectious objects are very amenable to immunological attack and vaccine production, and others are more problematic. So I guess it's just going to take more time or more dollars, probably both.
Yeah, all right. Well, we shall see as time marches on. I also heard that mRNA technology might be useful in some approaches to cancer, I guess, immunological response to certain cancers. So, yeah, I guess a lot more to follow. Anyway, that's it. NY2H.
Okay, very good, Lou. Yeah, I mean, mRNA vaccine technology might be useful for all manner of things. There's a lot of different labs working at a lot of different points. There is immunotherapy for some forms of cancer. The unfortunate aspect of cancer is that it's not one, ultimately it's not one disease. It's hundreds of different variations on a theme, that somehow different cell lines lose their ability to regulate cell growth. And usually cells are very aware of their environment. They can tell if they need to kind of reproduce more cells. If you cut your skin a couple of days, you'll have new cells taking its place. But for different reasons, different cell lines lose that ability to auto-regulate, and they go crazy. And so, unfortunately, the solution for one cell line is almost never the solution to another. So some of them will produce cancer cells with very, very unique protein, you know, structures on the surface that can be, you can build your own vaccine for it as time goes on and mRNA technology improves. You know, who knows how quickly you can turn over a protein into a mRNA vaccine. So it'll be interesting to see how effective it is. It's probably not going to be that golden bullet for all cancers, but you know, if it solves a couple of dozen, that's great. So we'll see what the future brings. As I've mentioned before, we all are fortunate enough to live in a kind of golden age of technology. If you sleep late Monday morning, you'll miss the announcement of some incredible discovery, it seems. So it's a joy to kind of be around these days. It would be rather boring to live in the Middle Ages. Also, Middle Ages was very dangerous and very dirty and not a fun place or a fun time. So everyone be happy with where you are today, because it could have been a lot worse. Anyway, thank you, Lou, as always. We're still open for questions, so if anyone has any questions or comments or topics for discussion, please hit that push to talk.
WS2N.
Yes, Paul.
It was in the news recently that you could get new COVID tests. You know, you could send away to to the government. They'll send them at the end of September. They'll send you, you know, two boxes, which is equivalent to four tests. So that's always pretty good to have them on hand. Back to you, Rob.
Okay, very good. Do you happen to have the URL for that?
No. Take me a minute to look it up. But, you know, it's usually what you get out of the, what is this, CDC? You know. There's a way to get it, and then you click on it. I'll have to find it. But you put in a testing for COVID end of September 2024, and I guess a couple of websites will come up, government websites. Back to you, Roy.
Okay, yeah, it's probably just a matter of Googling the topic and it'll come up. Be a little cautious. Make sure that you're on a government website, because I've seen a couple of fake sites that offer free COVID testing, and I'm not quite sure exactly what their scheme is, whether they're legit or not. So, you know, Google it and just to double check that you're on a government site, because usually the way that they handled it in the past was they were kind of hooked up to the post office, where you just kind of sent your information, address and such, and it was picked up by the post office, and then the rest of it was kind of automated. So thanks, Paul. That's useful information. Yeah, it's unfortunately we're still in a kind of a pandemic phase. It's still out there, and people are getting reinfected with it, unfortunately. Again, it's not anywhere like the nightmare when it first arrived, but it's still a massive nuisance. And you know, you like to take the safest approach. You know, you don't want to gamble with quality of life issues. I know people who didn't die from COVID, but the quality of their life was significantly undermined for a long time after the infection. So thanks, Paul. Anyone else with any comments or topics for tonight? Okay, well, I guess I'll pull out the TechNet puzzle a little earlier than I thought I was going to do it, but let's see how it works. The TechNet puzzle tonight is about dreams. We all sleep, and we probably all dream. Occasionally, I will bump into someone who tells me that they don't dream. Probably what's going on, when you're in random, okay, let's try this again. Okay, I don't know, something flaky is happening with the All-Star. It dropped out a few times earlier, and it dropped out now. I just wanted to double check. Everyone hear me out there?
Yeah, you dropped off at the word random. 82 to you.
And more of the WS2. And I sent you the email. I guess you could put it on your website for the COVID test.
Okay, I'll do that. Hopefully the All-Star link won't drop out on me or anything strange. Anyway, if there's anyone out there with any questions or comments or topics, then please hit that push to talk. Okay,
Alpha,
well, I'll try again.
Out the uniform.
Yes, Alex.
I was going to ask about the golf ball looking things that cover what I think are satellite antennas. And are they used just to shield what they're looking at, or are there other reasons that you would do that in an installation?
Okay. You got any more descriptor than I assume you're talking about antennas that have a fiberglass sphere shell over them?
Exactly. You see it on some radio telescope things. The large white, like, ball bubbles over what presumably is a satellite antenna at these big installations.
Yeah, I haven't done a great deal of research on that. My supposition has always been that those are protective covers, so that wind conditions and other things don't detune the antenna. You know, the bits and pieces of the radiating and or receiving portions of the antenna. I think it's just a protective shield.
Makes sense. I didn't know if there was any sort of weird method behind it or why it had to be multifaceted like a golf ball, but that just may be how they erect it.
Yeah, it could be the structure. It could be the best stable way of of assembling it. You know, they build it in little in panes, and then they put the panes together. So it has that interesting kind of shape to it. But you know, ultimately, it's just covering.
Makes sense. I'm waiting for the big Boeing dish later from WS2N also. 82 to you.
Well, I keep on losing the node for some strange reason.
KF2ZZ. KF2ZZ.
Testing, 1, 2, 3. Yeah, I don't know what the hell is going on tonight. The All-Star node is very wonky.
Yeah, this is NY2H. You seem to be the only one going down, though. Yeah, I see you log in both on Echolink and All-Star, which is really the same kind of unit. Maybe you should drop one of your connections. But, yeah, now you're on for 27, 28, 30 seconds. Let me see if you drop again. But everything else, I mean, the whole link, all the other links to the network are stable, so I don't know if it's on your end.
I don't know. Could be on my end. It's been known to happen. As far as being on the Echolink, I've been doing this kind of dual thing so I can listen to what Echolink's output sounds like for months now. So I doubt that that's it, but I mean, you know, what can I tell you? Software is a weird type of a thing. I've had times where I had to kill the app on my PC and restart it, you know, so it could very well possibly be something wonky with this particular application running this particular time. If I drop out again the next time, if I, you know, don't worry if I'm silent for a little bit longer, I'll kill the application and I'll restart it and try again. But so far, I'm not falling off of All Stars. So far, so good. Once again, hopefully Alex serves your question. If anyone has any better idea of what the covering, the purpose of the covering serves, feel free, hit that push to talk.
F2CC.
Yep.
F2CC.
Yes, what can I do you for, sir?
Hi, who's this tonight?
Say again, sir? You get kind of cut off at the beginning, so when you hit the push to talk, wait a second or two and then talk.
Let's give it another go. It's KF2CC, Brian. Who's this?
I am AC2GS. My name is Roy. I'm the net control operator for the Limark Technical Net tonight. It started at 8 o'clock.
Oh, yes, Roy, I remember you, of course. This is Brian in Rockland County, New York. How are you tonight?
I'm fine, Brian. How are you tonight?
Doing well. What's the subject du jour?
We generally don't have a subject du jour. We basically are open-ended. I assume that it gives people more of an option, that if they have any particular question, topic, or comment, they're more than free to introduce it, and we'll knock it around as best we can.
Okay, let me think of something for a moment.
Is who's that?
How you doing, Roy? AC2PL, Jeff.
Oh, good evening, Jeff. How are you tonight?
Not bad, Roy. The covering of the golf ball style covering, I guess it would be called the radome, R-A-D-O-M-E. And that's what I've always heard it called, and the quick search shows that it is, and it's just transparent to the frequency of interest. I think that's why it's constructed that way, QSO.
Okay, so if it's transparent to the frequency, then it's not really interacting with it. Again, it sounds like it's ultimately just a protective cover.
Roger, that's what I thought as well, and you were absolutely correct in your supposition. ACTPL, back to that.
Okay, very good. Thanks, Jeff. I appreciate it. Alex got the full answer, and hopefully, his curiosity is assuaged for tonight. But I hope he's curious about other things as time goes on. So, Brian, have you come up with anything yet?
Let's see now. Does anyone know what a God, I forgot what I wanted to say. Wait a second. Give me 10 seconds. Thanks.
Okay. No problem.
Okay. Quiz for tonight. Does anyone know what a nubistor is? N-U-B-I-S-T-O-R?
N-Y-2-H?
Yes, Lou.
I remember that term from back in the 70s, and I believe they used them in receiver front ends. So I think it's an amplification device, much like a transistor.
Okay, I think it's a vacuum tube, isn't it? Unless you don't know what it is, Brian, you're actually just asking, like, what the heck is that?
A nubistor is a little bit of a succession to the original transistor invented by Bell Labs. What it is that basically it's a little bit more optimized and has a much smaller form factor. Go on Wikipedia and look it up. But basically, it's the next move in the transistor. So you have the transistor coming first, then you have the nubistor, which is used in radio, and then it moved on from there pretty quickly.
DDH with a comment?
Yes, please, John.
I'm pretty sure the nubistor is a type of vacuum tube. I had a 6-meter preamp with a nubistor in it back in my tech days, and it does require a filament supply. It did have a filament supply, so I'm pretty sure it is just a very, very small vacuum tube. Go ahead.
Yeah, I agree with you. I took the trouble of going out to Wikipedia to double check it because I thought it was a vacuum tube, and it says that it's a type of vacuum tube that was announced by RCA in 1959. It was made to compete with the then new bipolar junction transistors, which may be why Brian you have it mixed up with being in the history of transistors. And it says it was smaller than conventional tubes of the day, almost approaching the compactness of early discrete transistor casings. Due to their small size, there was no space to include a vacuum fitting to evacuate the tube. Instead, nubistors were assembled and processed actually in a vacuum chamber with a simple robotic device. The tubes are made entirely of metal with a ceramic base. Triodes and a few tetrodes were made. So that's what a nubistor was.
That's quite correct. And it is a miniature vacuum tube, but it is the next step in the evolution of the solid-state transistor, even though it is a vacuum tube. It was used a lot in televisions around the early 1960s, before transistors became much more widespread and affordable.
Okay, but they're still thermal devices. They still emit electrons and require a heating element and such. So you can't really say that they were solid state devices. That they were thermal devices like the older vacuum tubes of yore.
The nubistor is not solid state. It was a vacuum tube, but it was very small.
Yes, I agree with you. Matter of fact, if anyone goes to Wikipedia, there's a cute little picture of a dime next to a nubistor, just to show you the scale.
Just a little trivia. you.
Yeah, there's all kinds of interesting intermediate devices that popped up in the 30s and the 40s and the 50s and even in the 60s before everything turned into pretty much a black box of integrated circuits and such.
A comment?
Yes, please comment.
Yeah, I don't know if you remember, there was a company called Amico. They made, I think they, everything they made was on a copper-like chassis. But I remember they made a 6-meter preamp with a Nuvistor, and I think they made a 2-meter preamp with a Nuvistor. I remember I had, for my old Lafayette HE80 receiver, I put an Amico 6-meter preamp in the front end of it to improve its sensitivity. Amico made both 6 and 2-meter preamps that used Nuvistors.
I'm still listening.
You there, Roy?
Yeah, I fell off the All-Star, so I killed the application. Restarted it, as I mentioned, might happen. So hopefully it's just the previous application that was running was a little bit wonky. So hopefully this will not happen again tonight, but we will see. So, Brian, I was going to ask comment about the device that had a Nuvistor in it. What year was that?
This WA2VDH. Well, I remember this was in the mid 60s. I that was around the time I was on 6 meters. My set was a Johnson Viking Challenger for 6 meters, and I had a Lafayette HE80 receiver, and I used an Amico preamp, a 6-meter preamp, which used a Nuvistor. I put that in the front end of the Lafayette HE80 receiver, give it more sensitivity. Go ahead.
Okay, thank you, John. Again, interesting device. You know, we've talked about all kinds of devices, the magic eye indicator when meters were rather expensive and vacuum tubes were relatively cheap. They manufactured magic eyes to adjust control settings and such. So there's all kinds of fascinating little gadgets and gizmos and devices that had its day and disappeared. So I thank you, Brian, for bringing up the subject. Again, I'm sure there's a lot of other little strange gadgets out there that have been lost to history that we haven't even thought about them. It kind of predates my involvement in electronics. So when I was a little kid, I took apart telephones and transistor radios, but they didn't have esoteric devices like Nuvistors. I still remember I pulled apart a 2-3 can transistor and had no clue how the hell the damn thing worked. It looked like someone had glued a small piece of salt crystal or sugar crystal on a electrical conductor and had these little thin wires attached to them at the sides. And it fascinated me that it did something, but, you know, taking a look at the guts of a bipolar, NPN junction transistor, you really don't have the faintest clue what it's doing.
It's a very good book that was published. I own a copy of it. A few years old, not much more. It's called Open Circuits, and it's a wonderful pictorial book with explanations about discrete electronic components. At least I enjoy it. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, okay, I'll have to look into that. Those are bygone days. I don't know when the first IC kind of came into general use, but nowadays, for the most part, if you take the cover off of any kind of interesting electronic equipment, you can't figure even out what the components are unless they have legends on the printed circuit, because they're all these little, usually black, rectangular plastic things with, either two or more contacts, and lots of luck trying to figure out how the circuits work. Back in the days that your publication was conceived of, you can take it apart and you can go from component to component and explain the different stages and the devices. It made sense back then. Now it's kind of a little bit black magic, unfortunately.
Oh, if you look on Amazon, they're selling the book, and it's a recent book, pretty much, last 2 years. And it's just quite excellent. If you're really into electronics and the beauty of electronic components, it's a wonderful reference.
Okay, I'll take a look after the technical net is over. Yeah, I mean, there are aesthetically nice-looking printed circuit boards, and then there are kind of ugly assemblages. They had a phrase for it called dead bug assembly, where you basically just have a bunch of components upside down, just soldered to common connection points. You know, dead bug.
As a matter of fact, I like electronic components so much is that I have a ton of electronic components, and what I do is I make art with them. And I've made a really beautiful piece with tubes and transistors and switches and relays and hard drive components and SSDs, and I could just go on and on and on.
Ah, very good. An artist among us. There are hams. I don't see too much of that generally going on, but there are a lot of hams that have their call sign, and they'll pop an old burnt out ceramic vacuum tube or some attractive old vacuum tube that no longer works, and they put it into the call sign plaque, and it can look very attractive. Sometimes they'll get into it through the base and put some LEDs to kind of fake light them up, like the heating elements are still working on them. So that's not uncommon. I've seen more than a few of those particular designs, but I've never seen something that you described. So if you take a picture of it and send it to me, I'll put it up on my link page for people who are curious about it.
I wouldn't mind that, Roy. If you'd like to email me at my QRZ address, I'll be happy to go ahead and send that along to you.
Okay, I can do that, or you could send me your email address. Again, my address, especially for the technical net, is mailbag@ac2gs.com. Or pretty much if you address anything at ac2gs.com, it'll come to me.
Okay, I have to write that down. Could you repeat that again slowly, please?
Yes, it is mailbag@ac2gs.com, Alpha Charlie 2 Golf Sierra. That's my call sign.
You said mailbag, mailbag, at ac2gs.com.
Correct.
Okay, I'll get that over to you in a little bit.
Okay, very good. I'll share it with the group out there.
Thank you.
You're welcome, Brian. If you come up with anything else, feel free to kind of raise your hand as the night progresses.
Well, is there anybody else out there that would like to contribute?
Well, I certainly hope so. I'll throw out the request if I don't get anything. I was going to share what we usually call a TechNet puzzle. Those are kind of interesting discoveries that I find, hopefully sometimes amateur radio related, but generally science and technology, and I like to kind of share it as an open-ended question and hopefully use it as an exercise to discuss some concepts and learn some new things. So I'll throw out the request again. If anyone has any questions or comments or topics for discussion for tonight's TechnicalNet, please feel free. Hit that push to talk. Give me your call sign and your first name. Okay, I guess we'll get into the puzzle. The puzzle for tonight is hopefully a subject we all have in common, and that's the subject of dreams. As far as I'm aware, we all sleep. There's always the odd person who tells me that they don't dream. I tend to disbelieve that. Usually what's going on is when we sleep, different centers in our brain get somewhat inhibited so that we don't do things that we shouldn't do. The most obvious is our motor function is kind of depressed, so that we will dream that we're running for the bus or the train, and thankfully that isn't connected to our upper motor control neurons while we're asleep. Unless occasionally people do have sleepwalking, which is a manifestation of a problem with turning that part of your brain off. But it's not uncommon. There's a lot of parts of your brain that are shut down during dream. One of them is memory. So that if you go through rapid eye movement dreaming and then stop and go into the regular cycle before arousal and waking up, by the time you get up, you're probably not going to remember most of any of your dreams. The times that at least I, remember my dreams is when I'm abruptly awoken during rapid eye movement dreaming. So if I concentrate on the subject, I can kind of take a snapshot when my long-term memory kind of goes back online so that I have it for the next day. Otherwise, it fades very, very quickly. So there's a lot of things that get turned off. Matter of fact, this interesting thing called a loose... Let me drop for a second. I don't want to time out the repeater. Okay. There's an interesting thing called lucid dreams. Apparently, at least half of the population has had at least one of those, in which you kind of are able to perceive that you're dreaming and control the dream as a narrative. So, you know, it's like getting on top of the horse and steering it. I still remember I had one of those when I was a small child. I was 8 years old, and I was dreaming, and I suddenly it came on me that I was dreaming. And I wondered what I could do with that knowledge. And I successfully projected television shows onto the doorway, a double door closet that was in the room that I was dreaming that I was in. So I was able to watch television in a room that didn't have a television through lucid dreaming. So anyway, that's the concept. The concept is that we all sleep and we all dream. So the question for tonight, I'm sure you've had dreams where you ended up naked in embarrassing conditions, or you arrived at your school and haven't studied for the final exam, and others where you've been flying around without a plane. So the question tonight is regarding dreaming is there's at least one thing that most people cannot do during a dream. If you piece together all the little fragments of dream that you've had and remembered through the years, you probably will realize that you do not do one particular action. Anyone want to guess what kind of action, what activity can you not do in most of people? There's a few exceptions, but for the most part, you can't do it while you're dreaming. In a dream.
Murder.
Anyone want to guess?
Murder.
W.S. Yes, Paul?
I go with falling out of bed. You know, it's just not normal. You know, you could fall asleep on a ledge somewhere, and for some reason, you just don't fall off that ledge.
Well, say again?
NY2H.
Yes, Lou.
Look at your feet.
Okay, that's interesting. I think you could look at your feet. I'll have to kind of take a look. further on the subject. I kind of knew when I brought this particular subject up that no doubt someone would come up with something else that may or may not. Do you know the mechanism for why you possibly couldn't see your feet?
No, but I think it might go along with lucid dreaming. There was a couple of items you could do if you weren't sure if you were dreaming or not. There were some tips to find out if you were dreaming. And one was look at a clock, turn away and look again, and see if the time has radically changed. And I think another one of those was looking at your feet, which you supposedly couldn't do while you were dreaming. There were a handful of them. Of course, they have mechanical means. They have these electroencephalograms with LEDs to let you know when you're in REM sleep. And these LEDs are over your eyelids, and they blink. Not enough, really, to wake you, but if you perceive that, you can train. But I've had a couple of lucid dreams. I haven't had them lately when I was younger. And they're terrific. Like you said, you could just imagine something, and you see it there. And you see it in great detail. I don't know if you've experienced the same thing.
Yeah, I kind of wasted my magic trip to just reinventing a TV projector when I was 8 years old and didn't know there were such things as TV projectors. Unfortunately, the image was consistent with NTSC standards because that's all I knew of at the time. I don't know if I projected a movie screen image. I don't remember the resolution, but I remember the glee to this day. The idea of being in control of a dream, even at that age, made me very excited. It was lots of fun, and I kind of got sad at the end when it ended. But I enjoyed every microsecond of it, and I still remember it to this day. And God, this is 60 years ago.
Yeah, Brian. I fell into it. I was doing experiments in astral projection. You know, these are the days of when you used to listen to like Long John Neville and those people. And you know, I would think, well, if I'm lying here in bed, can I really like astral project myself? So I would imagine going into Manhattan and floating maybe 3 or 4 stories in the air, going down an avenue or whatever, have you, you know, looking into buildings, etc. And that intent, as I'm falling asleep, turned into lucid dreaming. As I was doing that, I guess part of my brain was going into the sleep period, you know, REM, whatever. And that's how I would get into it. So, and it was surprising. I didn't know what it was. And then later on in life, I learned that this is an actual real thing. So that made me feel a little more sane.
Yeah. Time is very slippery in dreams. But on the other side, though, there's what made me really think in terms of dreams lately is Sean Carroll, the theoretical physicist, was having a great interview with a guy about all kinds of interesting aspects of physics. And the guy asked him if he ever kind of came up with any good creative ideas when he dreamed. And he made the comment that his dreams were nonsensical, which struck a big bell with me because I have noticed that my dreams are meaningless nonsense. I'm trying to solve a ridiculously meaningless logistical problem that makes no particular sense. And I can tell when I'm slowly coming out of REM sleep, all of a sudden I kind of get the sense that there's something terribly wrong, and I'm thinking about a problem that's really stupid. And then about an instant or two later, I wake up. So we also have rational filters in us that get turned off during sleep, so that we usually don't perceive the logical errors, the temporal errors, all the other strange things that actually legitimately go on in our head while we're dreaming these weird dreams.
Well, as far as the temporal part, yeah, I think that's why they say look at the clock And if it's reality, it should be changing time when you look away and look back. But typically in a dream, you'll, for some reason or other, it'll be a different time.
Okay, I never tried that, but my guess would be that I wouldn't notice the difference again, because sometimes I had a real, you know, there.